She was a bohemian girl with lots of life to live fast, only in her early 20s, but making up for time lost to who knows what, to books or the slow Cheshire cat vanishing act effected by a best friend, a dreamy childhood with the wrong doors unlocked, like her outsized painting ambition or the inability to trust those she knew, apart from her great uncle of the round head and romantic aspirations, who died but first told her in his French accent that he wanted to leave her a little money saved up from teaching so that when she found herself in the funeral home room alone with his ethylated body, he appeared to wink and say, "Go ahead now, enjoy yourself the way I always meant to." Her uncle, who read books in many languages and taught English to foreign girl students from Asia, while never forgoing his strong sex appeal cologne, because how could he keep himself from falling in love with students, to the point that the cashier at the local cinema knew him by the jokey line he used whenever he took a new one out, "But are there greater discounts for the sexy senior citizens?" He had gotten poorly embroiled with the last Korean student, one who would not so much as kiss him if he did not marry her, saying, "The cow won't give milk unless you feed it." This girl, his greatest disappointment, since only death separated him from the love he thought might one day be his, the love first whispered by French poetry, later mouthed by smoke rings in American kisser films he'd managed to see, back when some still called Zimbabwe the Belgian Congo. His real dream was to have become a painter in Tahiti. And so, with her uncle's sum of unused pleasure, she planned to go to Europe because she too had read a book about an enchantress in Spain, a book about traveling boys and hijinks that made escaping the slate gray a correct course of action. And then everyone had told her stories about the Alhambra in Granada, saying so determinedly it really was the place she had to visit, a new peak of European civilization, given that it was the last time so many ideologies about love and faith interpenetrated, such possibility flourishing in that moment. If you could only travel back and alter later history, in which all streams continued in their straightened way. "But you must go to Granada," they chimed, while she kept opening her Spain guidebook to the quotation from the medieval king who said, "There is no pain worse than being blind in Granada." And so it was confirmed, the message, especially as both her parents had started dwindling at the peripheries, a death moving toward the core. Clearly, there was no pain worse than living life too slowly. Once there, she bought a small guitar from a courtly guitar maker who asked if she would like to come by some night, despite his wife and colicky grandson, while also failing to know where someone could take guitar lessons authentic to Andalusia. Leaving the guitar maker's small cramped studio, carrying the guitar, she recalled a story she had read as a child about a happy pig named Pearl who found a magic bone and was going to stop to get coffee on her way back to a hostel populated by Viking descendants. But instead, a gypsy intercepted her with his El Greco face, all massive drooping eyes and aquiline nose, as he unhanded her of the new guitar and started singing right there to her in the Plaza Mayor, where she knew she had landed in the center of the thing she had envisioned but had not named. "You have killed me with your walk," he sang, strumming her guitar, stretching it out, "Camino, oh, oh," making his chin wobble with each oh. Behind each wobble lined up a gaggle of ancestors with the question of whether he could live up to them. He did his best. After his song was done, he asked her with some seriousness to come live with him in the small cave up above where tourists walk, white dwelling caves honeycombed into the hills facing the Alhambra, which perhaps the king had made as a testament of love to his wife, a story that endured in a way that made her question if she would ever really know what it meant to fall in love, despite her schooling in all the songs, because what had she ever known? Granada was either stripping her bare or layering on a new scrim, since she was feeling more, or at least feeling someone else's more. In most ways, she was bad as a gypsy singing premature songs of love her way, the blinds of not truly seeing him. And it was not only risky, but imaginary to throw yourself so in the thrall of someone else when, anyway, wasn't it always chemical? She had been curious about people throwing their hats down before her, but didn't know if she had ever really thrown her hat down to someone, or just to the sheer joy of their throwing their hats down. Was she to be so deprived of experience? Love, to fall in love. She had climbed mountains, but never fallen. Others had been obsessed, sometimes with her. Was she only to know escape and absconding? Yet what was the strange thrill of the gypsy singing to her? It had to do with all stories conjoining in a spot just above her navel, as if she were not on the road seeking, but at both source and end, inside a kaleidoscope. This itself is a story about the problem with the picturesque, and how it links with the picaresque, and how certain girls are prone to confusing the two, going out to wander the landscape with something like one of Claude Lorrain's mirrors turned backward at the landscape. If something seems correct enough in its set details, they forgive enough to think, here lies fulfillment, until fulfillment itself gives them the lie. At night, the gypsy and she did the deed, only one of them blushing in the dark on the floor in the gypsy cave, though somewhere she was also numb because she didn't stop to ask what, for all that singing about her eyes and voice, her smile and the chance at amor, amor, what about him was fulfillment? She had chosen this. It was no rape. He was dead center with her. But was there any vastness other than mammal embrace or the satisfaction of being in a cave with an avatar of Granada reaming her out of thinking? There was a mystery they tried to extract out of the other, one she would never solve. His animal breath in her ear, her face on the stone floor, the two of them more ancient because of the Alhambra beyond the window, timeless. Happy to swallow him in, this smooth genie, imagining him her conqueror while at the same time being the film goer, curious about the next scene in the movie. She almost knew enough to name it, but still woke the next morning, inquisitive about life. Her cheery guitar next to her in its open blue plush case, one she loved, as it also seemed to promise an interesting future. The gypsy took her to a special teteria where they sat on beaded pillows, and he drank Moroccan tea, broken only by song when he needed to illustrate a point about love, attachment, loss. What did they talk about? Guitars, his family, I love you so, singing like an animal in full display, throat full, eyes flashing. Midday, they went to see his stern aunt rehearsing, and there encountered the source of the wobble, the severe mannerism demonstrated by his own romantic uncle. To sing gypsy guitar, you had to hurt. And when you hurt most, you were to open your mouth wide and let out the longing she had read about. Duende, another flame over centuries. How good to hurt and no loss, to feel passion, 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 tremble, vibrato, melisma, words that appeared in the girl's head like keepsakes from another realm. There she was, deep in the cave with the gypsy family, a dusty moment out of time only she got to applaud, since no one had any idea where she was. While no one in the gypsy cave seemed surprised to see her, and such lack of surprise almost traveled far enough to create belonging. Thank you.